Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thank you one and all for being with us tonight. And I always say tonight because it's dark here and it's nighttime here, but for my guest, Odette Night Sky, who is in Australia right now, it's daytime. It's, as a matter of fact, tomorrow. And that's one of the wonders of working this way and the technology is we can have me here and her there and the studio in a third place. And you get to listen to fascinating conversation about wonderful things. So we will have some fun tonight. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing. And there have been some exciting things in the world of science. Once again, Albert Einstein said something 100 years ago, and it took them 100 years to do an experiment that proved it. He postulated that that space-time is kind of like a big rubber sheet, and gravity is like the heavy objects indenting that sheet and how they affect each other, if that makes sense to you. Which means that if there was a really, really powerful event in space-time, it should create ripples that go out like ripples in a pond. And they would go all over the universe, and that should be able to be measured. And this week they did that. Scientists using a very elaborate measuring device that's extremely large and in two different places on the planet, for the first time measured gravity waves. And they're now talking about being able to explore the universe with, in effect, telescopes that don't use light waves, but use gravity waves. And it's amazing stuff. And 100 years ago, Einstein just came up with these things. So one of the things that I find horrifying, at least in my country, is that people who are not good at math are not taught much about physics. Because the feeling is if you can't do the mathematics to show you how the numbers work, you shouldn't even hear about it, which to me is totally crazy. So a lot of people have never heard that light, for example, is both a wave, an electromagnetic wave, and a stream of particles called photons. And when Einstein was doing the original experiments on this and he was doing the math, he sent a message to one of his colleagues that said, it looks like in the math that the light waves are lumpy. It was before he came up with the actual particles, he saw lumps in it, which it gave me a big giggle. Everything that is made out of particles is also simultaneously an electromagnetic wave. How's that for something to think about? And how much of the universe is actually made up of particles that have mass? If you haven't heard this number, it's mind-boggling. The last calculation I heard was 3.7% of everything is physical stuff, is stuff that's made up of particles with mass. And everything else is energy. So when we talk about alternative reality or stepping out of the physical into the non-physical, or as science calls it, non-ordinary reality, we're talking about stepping into 97% of whatever the universe is, and not the less than 4% that our physical senses are capable of perceiving. So it's looking at a wider perception, but taking in everything. So chew on that for a little bit, because if you've never heard that stuff, when I first heard that, I thought it was pretty wild. But it makes a lot of the stuff we talk about in terms of spiritual work and healing work and all the other stuff that our wonderful guests talk about make more sense. We're working in that other 97% of the universe that is not physical. pretty cool. And once again, Albert Einstein was a complete genius and came up with things that couldn't be proved for decades and decades after he died. It's totally amazing. So thank you, Albert. And that's tonight's metaphysical musing. And let's talk to our guest, Odette Nightsky. Odette, thank you so much for being with us all the way from Australia.
You're most welcome. It's nice and shiny here in the land of down under.
Right. It's pitch black dark here. And just so you know, I have a dear friend and colleague in Brizzy, and it's so good to hear an Australian accent. It's just heartwarming for me.
Yes. Well, I was practicing my diction last night because sometimes I know that Americans have a very hard time understanding our lingo. So I'm going to speak incredibly clearly if I can.
Well, it's not so much the accent as it is just words that you guys use that are different than the words we use.
Absolutely,
which are wonderful fun. Matt and I were actually making fun of putting prawns on the Barbie, and I said, "Plastic bimbo? Why would you?" Anyway.
I like prawns. You leave those prawns alone. They're very good prawns.
And don't mess with your Barbies, I know.
Well, not that I have a Barbie. I mean, that's a little bit of a gross generalization of all of us. But, you know, yeah, I love my prawns still.
So you do some amazing work, and we will talk about that a little later. But what I always ask my guests is, how did your life unfold in such a way that you wound up with this understanding and doing this work? What was your walkabout? How did you get here?
That's a long story. I think generally, like quite a lot of people, when I arrived, it took me a while to integrate to be here. I felt like, you know, for want of a better word, I was like an ET dropped down and into a species I didn't understand. Which I find that in common with many who sort of walk non-ordinary reality. Mm-hmm. And as I moved along, I tried to fit in, found it very difficult, found theatre and acting, which was a wonderful outlet. I could step into being different parts of myself, which I quite enjoyed, but that took its toll, you know, things like auditions and backbiting and the stress took its toll.
Yeah.
And literally I descended into madness. I heard voices. I got very, very ill, both physically, mentally, in every way possible. I guess I had a pull to, you know, things like Jung and a few New Age things, but basically I was walking quite lost in search of what I thought was out there and what I didn't know was in here. And as I descended further and further into madness, I kept thinking, because my cousin was diagnosed with schizophrenia and I saw how the mental health system was for him, and I was quite frightened to actually speak up about it because I thought,
sure,
I don't want to go down that road. I just don't want to go down that road. And I felt a strong, I felt a strong pull to investigate more and more other ways of looking at it. I went to a healer who, to be honest, didn't do much for me, but he gave me some writings of a Swiss channeler. And this Swiss channeler spoke about how the mental health system in the future will change and things will be looked at from a more holistic perspective. And I think just that sort of struck a light bulb in me. And I went researching like a mad woman, and literally I was a mad woman at the time, you know, with my head shaved off and, you know, voices harassing me. And I, you know, kept reading, kept looking. And I kept hearing this voice saying, "You're meant to write this." And I sort of was like, "What are you bloody talking about? I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know what I'm doing." But I kept getting this instinct that you can't find the book because you're meant to write about it. And then I moved over into shamanism and the history of shamanism and how shamans worked with, you know, things like entities, possession, thought forms. And I just, it was like somebody just opened a book into my language. And I thought, everything makes sense. I get this. I get it.
Right.
You know, I get the language. I understood it completely. And so I researched, you know, quite madly. And I had lots of research. And as I researched and found more information, I thought to myself, I didn't know any so-called shamans, because there was quite a debate about, are you allowed to call yourself one because you're not indigenous and all that sort of stuff. And where I found myself was that the more I researched, the more I could hear a better side of spirit talking to me or coming through me. And it pushed me ever so gently to start dealing with what I was dealing with on my own. And I spent a lot of time in nature. I used to just walk out and sit under trees for hours and hours on end and say, whatever this is, show me, come to me. And I was guided about how to let things go, move things on, and not in a battlefield like a, like an angel and demon battlefield, because I was not religious, and in a way, a heartfelt way. And as I did that, I found myself getting stronger. I found my constitution stronger. I found the word sensitive to be an empowering word, not a derogatory word, which I grew up with. I was often called oversensitive, and I said, this is not a good thing. And I thought, I've just got this kind of gift that's been a bit misdirected, and I need to own that it's okay for me to be a highly sensitive person.
Mm-hmm.
So as that came about, I think, everything started to move, and I found myself needing to travel. I needed to get out of Australia. Australia really didn't feel like my homeland, the places that I'd been before. And I went over to England, and my ancestry is all, very much Celtic blood. And I stayed in a house in Norwich, and in Norwich is where a lot of witches were burnt, started a lot of the execution of witches, and I had nightmares every single night for a month, just horrific nightmares. And I thought, oh, good, this is not good. So I called up somebody by fluke, saw an ad in a paper, ended up in my shamanic training in residency and as an apprentice for a year, and that was it. I found my calling. I found what I was meant to do. And I do not classify myself as a healer. I like to empower people to find their own recipe of wellness, because that's what I did. So, that's sort of my journey in a nutshell, really.
Well, you've been to other parts of the world as well.
Yes, I grew up in Indonesia, and I lived in America, in Los Angeles. I lived in Scotland, England. I guess I've got half an Asian heart. I really love the Asian side of I've practiced quite a lot of Vipassana Buddhism, so my mind can be a better observer. So, I'm kind of a recipe of my own, I guess, and that's what I empower other people to be.
Right, which is wonderful. And so a little bit of how I understand this. I practiced yoga with an incredible teacher for a while, and she kept urging me to meditate, and finally got really heavy-handed about it. And, all right, I'll do this thing. And as soon as I started meditating, I realized later I was tapping into the lower astral plane, but I started seeing really wild and crazy stuff.
Yeah.
And for whatever reason, I didn't think that I was crazy. I just thought I was seeing something that I didn't understand. And I started looking for teachers, and it was long enough ago that it was hard to find teachers. But I found some good people, did a lot of reading, started getting a handle on it. And much later, when I was apprenticing with two healers in California, my real world job to have some money was working nights in a locked psych hospital.
Yeah, right. Yep.
And part of that was showing myself what the difference is between somebody who is integrated and somebody who doesn't have their stuff together. Convincing myself that I wasn't crazy. But the other thing was, I watched them talk to their voices, and I could see who they were talking to.
I ended up working in mental health and, running programs and case managing. And I kind of thought that was a bit bizarre that I was in that job. But they took me in because they said, you know, you're weird, Odette. You're very weird and you're eccentric, but you got your feet planted on the ground. And I actually quite enjoyed a lot of it. I enjoyed the clients enormously. Mm-hmm. I didn't think anything was too far out, to be honest.
Well, and you understood it from the inside out, not exactly like the clinicians who had no experience with it, no personal experience with it.
No, I did a voice, you know, hearing voices course, and we had to go out and plug things in our ears with voices, you know, saying mm-hmm. horrible things, and you know, go and get milk or go and get bread. It was a bit of an exercise, and we all went out and did that. And I actually didn't have trouble with the voices because I'd already, you know, found out what I was dealing with. But it was interesting when we came back and the teacher said, okay, who had the most trouble? And the two people that put up their hands were psych nurses.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Because they don't know what it feels like to be there.
And the underlying understanding clinically is that that's the definition of crazy. That can't possibly be real.
Well, also the definition is you do not indulge the voices, you do not indulge the hallucinations, you do not go there.
Right.
So everybody's so frightened of going anywhere near it, instead of, like, you know, doing it safely and gently, so you slowly open up to what's happening. They're terrified, so they're like, "Oh, I don't want to go there. It's freaking me out."
Well, somebody said that the ocean of consciousness is where the schizophrenic is drowning, but the mystic is swimming and playing.
Exactly, exactly.
As I
see it, I had a friend who I said, I don't know if I can do this. I'm drowning. You know, I can't mm-hmm. keep my head above water. I'm drowning. And he said, honey, he said, just let go. You'll notice you can breathe underwater.
Right, right, right.
And he was right. He was absolutely right. The fear of drowning was worse than, you know, finding my gills.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and since I remember being in a fly on the wall in a counseling session between a psychiatrist and, you know, in quotation marks, a very crazy guy.
Yeah.
And I could see the third entity in the room.
Yeah.
So he was talking about his conversation with this entity, and the psychiatrist was saying, that's a hallucination. That's not possible. Mm-hmm. And I knew that to the client, the psychiatrist was crazy, because he couldn't see what was obviously there. And to the psychiatrist, the client was crazy because he was describing something that wasn't possible in his frame of reference.
That's
and
cool.
I was like, oh my God, this is the underlying problem in all of this work for clinicians that don't have those skills, that have not opened
Absolutely.
To it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like I met a wonderful guy. I can't divulge his name, but he works with, you know, many people with entities from South America. And mm-hmm. he said the most entities he saw on anybody was psychiatrists.
Yeah, they pick them up from their clients.
Absolutely, but they don't, you know, they don't know what they're dealing with.
Right.
And, you know, and the thing is that, you know, the system is still very Freudian. You know, it's not progressive very much into looking at things from, you know, even more a Jungian archetypal perspective would be a better way to help somebody. But we're still stuck in the Freud, Lloyd.
Well, just for our own amusement about Freudian, on that Locke psych unit, I had this wonderful Southern black woman who was very eccentric and had voices. And clearly, had she been in another culture, would have been trained as a medium.
Yeah.
You know, and she never was a problem. She was very gracious. She was very polite. And she was up at 2 o'clock in the morning, pissed off. What's going on? And she said, there's a snake in my bed and he won't let me go to sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So everybody else, you know, it was like four other people on in the middle of the night. They're all in the nursing station tittering away about the Freudian implications of the snake.
Yeah.
And I waited until they weren't around and I said, have you ever seen him before? You know, do you know this guy? And she said, no,
yeah, exactly.
He's nasty. So I went into her room, closed the door, confronted the ghost, And it was the first time that I had a conversation with a ghost and asked them outright, do you know you're dead?
Mm-hmm.
And he looked very confused and said, oh, that explains so much.
Yeah. I recently had an email from somebody that said a therapist, he said he had hallucinations that snakes were coming to get him. Mm-hmm. And the therapist advised him to kill all the snakes. And I'm like, no. You know, if you, it's like that battle inside makes things worse. It doesn't make things better. You know, having insight to see why you're there, like you did, you know, hello, why are you here?
Right.
I have a wonderful client who got haunted by trolls. You know, they would come in every night in the window and scare the living heck out of her. And so we worked on, I said, okay, I want you to go and research trolls and I'll go and research trolls and we'll come back together. And we worked out all what they like to eat, all the mythology, history. And then we just worked with the trolls and they don't visit her anymore because they got, you know, they got the understanding.
Yeah, trolls are fascinating because they function at geological time, which makes them seem dull. It makes them seem like they're not very smart, but they're just thinking much slower than our timeline.
Yeah.
And they will continue to do whatever they were assigned to do long after the circumstances have changed.
Yeah.
So I find them in waterworks in 200-year-old mill buildings underwater, yes, stuck, and they won't leave. This is my job. I can't leave.
Yeah. And with her, you know, she's a very old soul who's like a medicine. She's incredible with herbs and, you know, she's incredibly gifted. And she was basically frightened off by doing all what naturally comes to her.
Right.
So when we met, we've been building what her absolute, you know, what her medicine is. So the trolls came in because they were there before and they just needed a better job, you know,
right,
than
right.
Than
they need to be reassigned. But the other thing is they probably recognized her and liked her energy, so they just went there because it felt good.
Her house is wonderful. They're probably thinking, oh, this is such a good place.
It's not scary. It's not scary. Maybe she'll see us and hear us. And
Exactly. Yeah. So it's how it's perceived. And unfortunately, you know, not all, but, you know, quite a lot of the mental health system perceives things as do not engage, be afraid. And that just leaves people with just more anxiety and more anguish, unfortunately.
Well, I will tell you a story about a fun conversation I had with a newly minted and very full of himself psychiatrist when we come back from the break. I want to make sure that people know how to get in touch with you online. What's your website?
My website's www.contemporaryshaman.net. And if you look up my name, I'm pretty much all over the place, so you'll find me.
Which is a good thing.
It's good.
And when we get back, we can talk some about the kind of work you do and your approach to things and all of that, because I found it completely fascinating and I have lots of questions.
Okay.
So one of the things that's very exciting right now for everybody who's listening, and you probably haven't heard this at all, is that we have a new mobile app for Empower Radio. So people used to have to tune in to our website and listen either from the archive or, well, we're on a bunch of streaming media locations too, but you had to kind of find us. And now with the app, you can just install that app and look up programs and look this up and listen. You don't have to wait until 9 o'clock at night. You can listen to the Farkas Files or whatever your favorite Empower Radio show is anytime.
Well, it's getting out there. That's great.
Yeah, which is a huge difference. You know, we've got thousands and thousands of listeners, and I'm always happy when I hear that my show is the one that gets the most hits most months. But the more convenient it is, the easier it is, the more people will be able to listen. And, you know, I've been doing this for 5 years, so we've got hundreds and hundreds of interviews with wonderful people like you. So it's very exciting to have an even easier way for people to listen to this. And one of the things that happens is when you're on the show and your information is plugged into all the stuff that we do, suddenly people you never heard of show up.
I've got enough of that. But, you know, welcome, more and more. Welcome, more
right.
and more.
Right. You know, it's fascinating to me where people show up from because they either heard the show or heard me interviewed on another show. That kind of thing is very, very powerful, the way we can talk to each other and lots of people can listen in at random times. So, all right. So my guest is Odette Nightsky. We are on the Farkas Files here on Empower Radio. We will be back shortly unless we get taller, and don't go nowhere.
Sassy! Sassy!
This week's episode, Danger at the Old Well.
Last one to the old well's a rotten egg!
Ha-ha! I win! Whoa! Ah!
Sassy! Johnny fell down the well!
I'm wet!
What, Sassy? You know where Mr. Gunderson keeps his rope? Go get it, girl! What? You'd rather use this time to set people straight about shelter pet adoption?
I'm cold!
People shouldn't be afraid to adopt from a shelter? Because shelter pets are screened for sound, health, and temperament?
I'm wet and cold!
Sassy, what about Johnny? What? Let Johnny sit in the well until he learns to be more self-reliant? Sassy!
What'd he say?
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
Have you ever lost a cat? And have you ever wanted to get your cat back after you lost it? Hi there, I'm Andrew Hoffman. I went on this website called InventNow.org. Then I decided to make an invention of my own. It's called the Lost Cat Magnet Invention. So you can get your cat back after you lost it. Just turn it on, and lost cats stick to it. That's a good cat. If your cat was hiding up in a tree, it won't be up a tree anymore. It will be stuck to the lost cat magnet. And sometimes they fly toward you in the air. Just listen to one satisfied cat. See? That's proof. You should go to the InventNow.org website too. But just remember one thing. Don't do a lost cat magnet.
Anything's possible. Keep thinking. Get started on your own inventions or just play some games at InventNow.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, the National Inventors Hall of Fame Foundation, and the Ad Council.
Come to the forest. It's a place not so far away. A place where you don't have to mow the lawn or babysit.
I saw lizards and squirrels and ducks.
Ladybugs, caterpillars. It's really cool, actually.
A place where you don't have to make time for free time.
Lots and lots of kinds of species here.
Out here, you may even meet the mysterious creature known as the other you. The enchanted you.
It's magic what flowers do.
The adventurous you.
My favorite tree, yes, is that one.
The free-to-be-me you. Ask your parents to take you to this not-so-far-away place. Come to the forest, where the other you lives. But first, stop by discovertheforest.org, a public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back with my guest, Odette Nightsky from Australia, literally talking to us from Australia, where it's already tomorrow. I always say we don't have to worry about the world ending because it's already tomorrow in Australia.
Yes, don't worry. You're fine. You'll still be here.
Exactly. So I wanted to tell you that story about my conversation with a very full of himself new psychiatrist. His sister invited me to a party just to see what would happen if the two of us talked. And I started the conversation by saying, okay, we have to start by my acknowledging that I have at least four, maybe five diagnoses in the DSM-5, which is the manual that they look up what your particular kind of crazy is. And, you know, he looked kind of confused by that. And I said, you know, I have those experiences, but I'm fully integrated, so I'm not crazy. So you're going to just have to deal with the fact that there are people that have those experiences but are not coming apart. And we got all the way to the end of it, and he was losing ground pretty badly. And he threatened to lock me up. And he was kidding, but, you know, he was like, the only thing I can do is pink slip you. You know, the paperwork's pink. And I just looked at him and said, that's what you think you can do, but you haven't considered what I might be able to do. And he blanched and stepped back.
And I said, I have a little comparative one there.
I said, you know, I committed and I make a vow every day not to hurt anybody, but I can make an exception for you. It was a lot of fun. You have your own stuff.
I had, I went to a, before I worked in mental health, I went to a psychiatric day ward. And mm-hmm. because I'd had so much theater experience and teaching in theater and stuff like that, I went to offer my services as a volunteer, you know, to do drama games or anything like that, which would give them a bit of fun, right? And I remember walking in the door and obviously the head psychiatrist of this group wasn't there yet. Everybody else was, and they were all looking a bit sheepish, and I just started to chat to them, and they all sort of came out of their shells a little bit, thinking, you know, I was maybe one of them, which was fine, you know, because I am. And then he came in, and he walked in, and they all shut down, and I turned around, and I could just feel the vibration of him, and I think, yeah, I'd shut down around him as well. And he told them to go and do something, sort of like a teacher, a headmaster mm-hmm. would. And he said, okay, come over here and I'll just take a few moments and interview you. And so we sat down for about 10 minutes. And he said, so tell me about yourself. Tell me, you know, your theatrical upbringing, blah, 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 blah. And I said, okay, well, I grew up in Asia, you know, I went to all sorts of different schools, international schools, things like that. And he kept repeating, as I was talking, he kept saying, oh, dear. You know, every now and then, oh, dear. Every now and then. And I kept thinking, is it me or is it something patronizing here? And then he said, so what's your theater experience? And I told him, you know, I worked in, you know, improvisation companies in LA and I'd done this and done this. And he said, so no real formal training. And I said, well, I've been the boards, you know, I've been on the boards most of the time, you know, and I get work and stuff. Oh, dear, oh, dear. And I turned to him and I said, excuse me. I said, you have said, oh, dear, at least five times since we began. I you know, if I was really unwell, I'd find it incredibly patronizing. And he said, no, I haven't. No, I didn't. I think that's your projection, blah, blah, blah. And then we continued on, and then he did it again. He said, oh, dear, and I turned around and went, gotcha. And he just caught himself and he went, oh. And I said, really, Matt, you know, look at your own stuff, please. And I walked out and all the other people there just clapped as I walked out. And then, of course, he sent me a formal notice saying, I don't think you'd be appropriate for this job.
Right.
And I went, yeah, of course I wouldn't be, would I? Yeah, so everybody has their moment with a psychiatrist, don't they?
Right, right. On the other hand, I worked in another place where a patient gave me the family story, not the psychiatrist. Mm-hmm. And he said, okay, so sit in on the sessions with me, which at this big, stodgy, 250-year-old, very conservative place made all kinds of ripples in space-time continuum. Mm, but he was just, you know, if she's comfortable with you and she'll tell you the story and you've got some kind of way of tuning into her, that's what she needs. So I don't care what anyone else says.
No, so, I think some are coming out that are really, really good now. I mean, I know a couple that have got a really good reputation now and they're saying – they're kind of agreeing, like, you know, the clients I have saying, you know, this is obviously a recipe of wellness that's working for you. You know, right. A little bit of meds, a little bit of working, you know, working with Odette. Even the psych nurses in where I used to work, you know, people would say, I want to speak to Odette. And they go, yeah, you can speak to her. You know, so it's you know, I'm not that far out that they think I'm a crazy person talking to a crazy person. Little do they know I still am, relatively, but.
Well,
yeah, slowly it's opening.
Well, you're not crazy. You're just tuned into things they're not. I have
absolutely.
I have a friend and I who bounce back and forth the idea of being on AM radio or broadband.
Yeah.
You know, most of the people walking around are on AM radio, and it's short range, staticky, hard to tune in. There's not much on it. And then there's everything else that is possible on radio, FM radio, police band, all the emergency stuff, TV, cell phones. But if you don't have a receiver that will pick that up, they don't exist for you.
Yeah, true.
It's a reality that you can't tune into. And so for those of us that are broadband that can pick up more than what other people are picking up, it seems to them that it's impossible. But it's, you know, we're just listening to more stuff than they can, and the music's better.
Absolutely, yes. And really, people will find you if they want to find you. I mean, I remember, you know, I've had people from Poland, you know, contacting me, from Hungary, from, you know, a little tiny fishing town in South America. You know, the internet for that reason is a wonderful thing.
Right.
Because
right,
it's allowing people to know there are more ways of looking at things than just this, you know, sort of conservative viewpoint nowadays,
right,
which is a blessing for a lot of people.
Absolutely. So tell me more about your work, the way you work with people, what you offer.
Okay. Well, my work is basically, like I said, it's on a shamanic framework. On a contemporary shamanic framework, because we live in such a modern society, you know, we can't really go out and be traditional anymore. I mean, we can, you know, if we take a break, but a lot of people aren't able to do that. So what I offer is teaching and ways for you to incorporate shamanism into your daily life, so mm-hmm. you can, you know, get on the bus and go to work and still, you know, do a few things as you're doing that. I also, one of my primary practices is soul retrieval, and that's not soul retrieval in the way that I do the work for you. I walk with you the whole way, and we go and get, you know, sort of your lost fragments back. We deal with the abuser, but it is about empowering the person.
Mm-hmm.
The thing I feel about, you know, I guess this is in my story, the concept of healing is a lot of people want a healer to heal them. Well, I'm about you finding the healer within yourself, because everybody has the potential to balance out the shadow stuff within themselves.
Right.
So soul retrieval is pretty much a primary for me. I also do Skype consultations. I have spirit coming through quite strongly, giving visions of other lives. I also do, you know, other life work, between lives and births, entities, attachments, ETs, aliens, you name it. There's, you know,
usual menagerie. I know them all.
Yeah. No, all the menagerie. It's all there for the play. So I usually say to people, look, you know, don't be afraid to say what you want to say, because really nothing freaks me out anymore. You know, I freak myself out enough. So, you know, I've dealt with ghosts, I've dealt with entities, I've dealt with all sorts of things. So, you know, nothing's off the subject.
Right.
But my primary thing is safe practices, because I've had a lot of people who have come from so-called shamans, including in America, and, you know, indigenous ones too. They have been raped, they have been abused, some horrific cult stories. And which I find, really, I'm quite justice orientated in people and how they practice.
Right.
And so we do a lot of work on clearing that, so they can be self-empowered and get on with their own life. So I deal with a lot of people who have been abused in general.
Yeah, some of the worst stuff I've ever seen is ritual abuse.
Absolutely.
So, and fortunately, I had one teacher who specialized in teaching about that because of her history. I actually had two teachers that taught me a lot about that. And I'm always happy when I don't have to deal with it.
Yeah. And you know, it's all a learning curve, you know, it's all a lesson. But, you know, I'm not a completely perfect, compassionate human being. I get very protective, you know, and I get very justice orientated. I'm, you know, I follow all the things about, you know, the church's abuse and stuff like that, and it gets in my craw. So I do as much as I can to help people get the fragmented parts home so they have a chance at having some form of an empowered life.
Yeah, absolutely. And it sounds like you're using all the traditional shamanic methods. You just have come up with contemporary ways of
introducing
them to people.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I have shamanic helpers, absolutely. But I am not indigenous to Australia. You know, I'm not an Aboriginal person. I am indigenous to the Celtic lands. So I use, that gift through my ancestors. You know, I look pretty much everybody sees me as a Celt. You know, I call on my Celtic bloodline, but I also have strong connections with Tibet, strong connections with American Indians, strong connections with Siberia, you know, and that's what I mean. I think we're all a recipe of our own, and it doesn't matter where our bloodline or where our spirit line comes from. It's how we are of service that makes the difference.
Right. And in the same way that you find your teachers, you find your allies and your guides. And I'm always amazed at the varied traditions that my allies come from.
Yes.
Like, really? Oh.
Yeah, well, it's kind of good because it's, you know, it's like when I take people, you know, journeying to the power animals, you know, I don't do it for them. We do it together.
Right.
And, you know, they're hoping for this great, huge, you know, bear or wolf. And then sometimes this little bee turns up or, you know, and they're like, whoa, you know, that's rather small, but those small things could be incredibly powerful.
Right. Right.
You know, so I love watching, you know, even though they've got their eyes closed, I love watching the whole surprise expression on their face going, whoa, that's what wasn't I expecting.
That's probably
joy. I actually really enjoy journeying with people because I'm like, you know, I've got my inner child is pretty much up and well, and I'm like, oh, let's go on an adventure, come on, let's see where we're going, you know. It's you know, it doesn't have to be deadly serious all the time. We can find the joy in, you know, connection as well.
Well, and this stuff is so wild and crazy that if you take it totally seriously from any perspective, you know, it's got to be this way and this is what it means, you drive yourself nuts.
We've got to dapple all this, really, you know, when we're talking about people's abuse issues. You know, they are serious, and they need a really safe, gentle place to be validated and taken care of. But also, I've noticed a sprinkle of humor, you know, can just lighten an energetic load massively. And, you know, it's really important to, you know, find the laughter within the inner child, so the person gets to know what laughing is again, you know, gets to know how, you know, enjoying this great adventure can be. And it doesn't always have to be a heavy duty walk.
Right. Absolutely. I was just thinking that phrase you used is probably a wonderful, famous laughed words. This is not what I expected.
It was just like, it's not out there, it's in here. And goodness me, what a surprise.
Certainly not what I expected. My joke is my junior high school guidance counselor would probably be totally freaked out about where I wound up.
Yeah,
it was not
well,
what he told me my life right. was going to be about.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, it's a joy because you get to unravel your story as opposed to a story that maybe even been imprinted on you, or, you know, you picked up as a pattern that you should be like, you know. We're quite original, unique beings, you know, and it's lovely to see people's stories expand in their own right.
Right, right. Well, you know, they were dealing with what they could see, and they were all parts of my personality and skills and capabilities that I had. So it wasn't completely off the mark. It's just took some interesting twists and turns in the story. So I always love people that play video games, and they say, are you a gamer? I go, why would I be a gamer? I do shamanic journeys.
Yeah, well, everything that's the gaming dream, isn't it?
Everything that you do on screen happens in the real shamanic world, and I meet strange beings that are very powerful, and they give me articles of power, and they tell me secrets. Yeah, I know all that stuff, but I'm not going to do it on a game.
No, I mean, really, when I journey with people, it is. I guess it's like that anyway. You know, I remember one client I had when I was in my training, and I was quite, you know, quite a stump. She awoke, you know, into a past life or a linear life or whatever you like to refer to it as. And I said, so, and she said, it's really dark, you know, it's really dark. Excuse me. And I said, okay. I said, just feel yourself around, you know, what do you feel? And, you know, we moved along. And then she said, oh my God, I'm in a dragon's belly. And I went, and I'm thinking, okay, a dragon's belly. What are we going to do now? And I said, so how does it feel to be in a dragon's belly? And she's going, oh, it's quite comfortable, really. And I went, all right, just sit there for a while. You know, I was thinking, God, right. Now, where do we go from being in a dragon's belly? You know, so it's a wonderful journey and it's a wonderful adventure, whoever you go with. You know, and I really relish that. I really enjoy it. You don't always have to travel on a plane. You can travel within just as well and actually see so many more places sometimes.
Right. And very strange things.
Absolutely.
And dragons are wonderful. I have some wonderful dragon friends.
Yeah. You know, cartoon world, whatever floats your boat, you know, there's no right or wrong. It's just, you know, just make sure you keep yourself safe upon the journey that you're on.
Right. Well, you know, it's always wonderful when I have one friend who's been on the show several times. When I first met her, she looked at me and said, who's your friend? What do you see? Dragon. I said, what color is he? Red. What's his name? We've been friends ever since.
That's lovely. That's beautiful.
Yeah. Yeah. She's one of the people that talks about broadband that, you know, we just see and hear more than the average person does because we have a different radio system.
Yeah, and that's what I often say, you know, everybody's got a radio and they pick up all sorts of different things.
Right, and the problem is that they pick up things they don't understand and they immediately want to make it go away. Tune into something else, and it's, okay, this is fascinating and you don't know, understand it. Find somebody who does understand it, who can help you listen to that without it being scary.
Exactly, and it's not so much what's happening, it's your relationship to what's happening that makes the difference, you know.
Right.
It's like, you know, I might have my inner radio and it'll put on a really cheesy, daggy song from the 70s, you know, and I'm like, oh, it's in my head all day, but I notice if I sing the song outright, then it goes away, you know. If I can embrace it, you know, in some sense, like if I get a creepy feeling late at night, often to me I put my head down and that's when it starts. And I'll sit up and I'll, you know, and I'll say, okay, oh, come on then. Hello, who are you? And as soon as I do that, I can find my way out, clear the way, help the being on the way, and I can go back to sleep.
Exactly. Yeah, then if somebody shows up here, my first question is, okay, how did you get through all the protection? You must have a very important reason to be here.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes, you can see that I put a lot up here when I go to sleep saying, don't come in. So what's your problem? So, well, we have a few more minutes. What do you want people to remember about you and your work? How should they be thinking about it?
Well, I'd probably say, you know, I often say to people, you know, it's really important that I speak your language. So I offer them to go to my Facebook page, my blog, my website. I've got some ebooks there I've written, you know, to feel out if I speak your language. Mm-hmm. Because really when somebody's going to walk with you to, you know, guide you or empower you on a path, you need to kind of, you know, grok each other's way of looking at things. And I think that's really important. You know, not everybody suits everybody. And I find that if I don't feel like I suit you, I will find somebody that will suit you. And because, you know, I'm not that arrogant to think, you know, I'm going to solve it for everybody. I do think sensitivity and how we handle being very sensitive in the world is probably, you know, a bit like my key work, you know, for want of a better phrase. Right. I am a very highly sensitive person, and I've had to deal with being overly sensitive. and now I see it as, you know, it's a blessing. It's an absolute blessing. And I would want others to know, you know, the qualities that they have don't have to be this great burden of suffering. It could just be a gift turned backwards.
Right.
And you know, yeah, I'd love to guide you to turning it forwards.
And understanding what works for you and what doesn't. I mean, you're never going to get me to a stadium with 60,000 people.
No. No, I was in a conference once, and a very high tech, beautiful conference, you know, third floor with harbor views. And I just got it. I just said, no, 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 no. You belong under an oak tree sitting right. in a circle with a group of people. You know, I'm not up for the corporate world. I'm up for the down to earth sitting with a stone in my hand, talking to you under a tree, or, you know, on Skype with a shaman's tree between us.
Yep. Yep. Absolutely. So we always run out of time at the juiciest parts of the conversation. So we're winding down here. Let's make sure people know how to find you again. What's your website?
www.contemporaryshaman.net.
Fantastic. Remember, it's .net. And again, it's Odette, O-D-E-T-T-E, Night Sky.
N-I-G-H-T-S-K-Y without the hyphen. And that's why all the Russian people find me. They think I'm a Nitsky.
That's wonderful.
That's okay. I've got a bit of Russian in there somewhere anyway.
That's wonderful. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. This has been great fun.
You're so very welcome.
I knew you were a kindred spirit, and we would have a lot to talk about. And thank you so much for being with us from the future.
And I'm in here.
So my guest tonight has been Odette Night Sky, who's talking with us from Australia, where it's already tomorrow. Again, thank you so much for being on the show. And if you like, stay on the line, and after we go off the air, we can chat.
You're most welcome. And blessings to all of you in the U.S., you know, really. I hope to get there one day, because you're a beautiful place in itself.
Thank you so much. And if by chance any of you are curious about who's this guy David and what in the world does he do, you can go to househealing.com, and cleverly hiding in plain view on the contact menu is every conceivable way I could think of to get in touch with me, including a scheduling link. I do a free 20-minute conversation by phone that's an assessment of a person, place, situation, whatever it happens to be, and we can see how my work might be useful to you. One of the things, obviously, that we're very, very excited about at the moment is the new app. I've always told people that to listen to the show or find the archive, you go to thefarkasfiles.com. And, of course, it's all there in chronological order. But now you can go to the app. You can click on Programs and then click on the Farkas Files and just look through the list and listen anytime, anywhere, which is so exciting. And we've been waiting for this for a very long time. So we're entering a new era. We're also on almost every streaming media. TuneIn, iHeartRadio, iTunes Podcasts, Stitcher. So you can find us if you use those. You can certainly listen to us through those as well. And it's very exciting to be on this planet at this time. Excuse me, able to communicate with you this way and share this with you. It's just so much fun. So This has been an exciting evening. I hope you've enjoyed it. And this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Have a fantastic week.